Three weddings, so it's you and me. And
we're live. Welcome back to the RCAD. This is the bonus episode where it's just Nick and I shooting the shit, and maybe Jack will stop by. Maybe he won't because he overslept. So
who knows?
But I've kicked it up a notch for those playing along at home. I was drinking coffee earlier.
God, now you get a meal in a glass.
Now I have a meal in a glass. I've definitely mixed the families, considering I started off by drinking a White Russian, and now I've moved on to Young's Double Chocolate Stout.
Yeah, okay. So. I was thinking it was a Guinness.
Yeah, thanks, Kayla. It is just us two.
Every time I see something like that, I always think it's Guinness. I always refer to as a meal in a glass because it's just so thick, you know, and it's got so much minerals and everything that's in it already. It really is, to me, a meal in a glass. But.
Well, and I know I've mentioned this before, but beer does not sit well with me. So,
oh, right,
like regular wheat beer, like you give me a Budweiser or anything like that, it's just not good. It's immediate headache in a can. Hmm. And
it's funny how that does that. Like the pub I used to go to all the time when I lived in Knoxville, a friend of mine at the time, they had Pabst Blue Ribbon on tap, and I cannot stand Pabst Blue Ribbon. Wow. It's one of the few beers, doesn't matter if I have one or 12, I'm going to have a hangover because I think it's just such a shitty beer that it just doesn't agree with me. Anything else, though, I'm pretty good.
Kayla says that Guinness is not thick. So.
And she would know because she likes a good thick thing to smack around.
Wow. Wow. Really just kind of laying into our listeners here. We, you know, we have so many here. By the way, Sherry, thanks for the nice, you mentioned how you liked Nick's song.
And, oh, thanks.
You also liked the picture that I posted as our opener here. So, which is Jabba's Palace spray painted with graffiti that said RCAD. So
thanks, Sherry. I know I said it was Paul McCartney's Dance Tonight from his 2007 record. So yeah, that was, I really liked his 2005 record, and then he's kind of dropped off since then. He's kind of got a little crazy, but his 2007 record was okay. But Chaos and Creation, his 2005 record, that was Paul's last like really good record, in my opinion.
Now, you and I we wanted to talk Beatles, but we just didn't have the chance to kind of talk about it because for those of you that are listening or watching us live, you know that there is a Jan Jack Facebook group post about like basically voting, you know, mm-hmm. on all of the Beatles. It's kind of like a bracket of greatest Beatles songs, pitting certain mm-hmm. songs that should never be pitted
against each other. Yeah.
Yeah. And also Nick and our frustration with some of the voting results, right?
Yeah. Well, it's because like, it's one of the things that always bothers me about any time anyone votes on anything. Because, you know, it's like when you hear people like back in the 60s, like, oh, I voted for John F. Kennedy because he was good looking. And you're like, really? Like, you know, like you voted just because of looks, you know, like, and it's the same thing. It's like, oh, I know that song's title, so I'll vote for that one. But you don't know anything about why the song is good, you know, and so it makes you really frustrated when certain songs, you know, are really superior, like either through structure or just what it's trying to say or whatnot. And then someone votes the other way and you're like, it irritates me a little bit. But, you know, like I said, I was saying to Matt before we hit record that like the only one that's really irked me was I'm the Walrus losing.
So can't Buy Me Love.
To Can't Buy Me Love, you know, because even though Can't Buy Me Love is a great, you know, nice pop song, you know, and it definitely is a hit, you know, but it, like I'm the Walrus, just structure and lyrics and everything that's going along with that song is just, it's like, I mean, it's arguable. Yeah. That it's, you know, of the Magical Mystery Tour EP, it's probably the best track on it. I mean, I don't know, like, because that's not technically, it is part of the EP, but it's not part of the EP. But I don't know.
You're just talking about the side A.
The side A. Yeah.
Yes,
the
correct. A. Yeah. Yeah. I would, yeah, I mean, it's tough for me because, yeah, no, yeah, I would say so. Because, I mean, it to me, it beats out Blue Jay Way. Yeah. Although I love the lyrics and the play with lyrics that Harrison comes up with.
I drove up to Blue Jay Way just for that, just because of that freaking song. Blue Jay Way is in it's in Hollywood. It was it was a little house he was staying at up near the Hollywood sign. And it's called Blue Jay Way. And so I drove up just to go to that street, just so, like, this is where George was staying when he wrote that song, you know. But that's what I'm saying. You know, there's a hug upon LA. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's where it comes from. So like,
And Will mentions, I've just seen a face. Was that another? I'm trying to.
It was a vote. I'm not sure what it lost to.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I do like I've just seen a face. I like the rhythm pattern of it, and you know, it's just a catchy little song. I mean, I think of the Help record. It's definitely one of the high points on that record. It's hard to beat Yesterday though, because Yesterday's on there, and then Help and Ticket to Ride and. But yeah, Help is a very interesting record because it's a transitional record, you know, from the very stereotypical poppy Beatles to when you get to Rubber Soul, where they've, you know, discovered weed and get into just leap them forward so much in songwriting.
Right. I mean, it's interesting because it's like, well, yeah, a lot of them are transitional. It's like Revolver's transitional, Rubber Soul's transitional. It's like you can see. You can see different aspects, although, you know, a lot of people lump Rubber Soul and Revolver together.
Yeah, I mean, they could almost be a double record, but there are differences in the two.
Yeah, and even just like the feel of Revolver. To me, I mean, I'm a big Revolver fan. That's still, it's like, as I mentioned in one of my comments, like, to me, it's hard for me to vote against anything than Revolver. Like, even Paperback Writer, which... I was kind of mad about what it beat out. But it, because it was made during those sessions, I just have a lot of love for like that sound, the quality of like the just the feel of those songs, like from those sessions, I just love. So
absolutely. Yeah. A guy was even a little mad that Here, There, and Everywhere didn't.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, 'cause I love Here, There, and Everywhere. And it's like, what? You're crazy. You know, people don't vote the way I want them to vote. You're nuts. I like that. Nice.
Weed always helps the creative process, Kayla. So
it does.
So Will Fry's just learning that they did weed. How many weeds did they do? No one knows.
It's hard, you know.
They got lost in the weeds, some might say.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean they basically had discovered weed early 65. And the filming of the movie Help. That's why it's kind of so all over the place, because a lot of them were just high the entire time.
Yeah, you see their eyes in some of those like in some of the movie scenes. You're like, you know, the Bahamas were, you know, they're not squinting because the sun was too bright.
No,
so,
but that's what's neat. Like, it's funny how like what little things can influence you though, because there's a very quick scene where the Beatles are running through like a shop center in the movie Help, and there's a little Indian shop in there, and there's a sitar there. And George was fascinated with that and picked it up, like just while they were filming. I was like, oh, what is this thing? You know, and that's what got him into Indian music, was just kind of discovering this weird looking instrument, and how like just the smallest little things can change the course of your life or history. You know?
I think that's what, you know, and Nick, you and I, we talked a lot about music and what makes really great musicians, like that next level artists, like beyond just being like a, you know, I can sing a song, or I can play this melody, or one hit wonder. You know, a lot of the great musician artists that we love are always in search of something new, and they lend themselves open to new experiences or new, you know, creative processes. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like something comes along and they're like, oh, well, what does this do? You know, or how can I like, you know, I don't know.
I'm fascinated with even like with that kind of too, like with, psychology and like what makes people the way they are. 'Cause I was a while back, like 8 months ago or so, I was reading about how, you know, how people say like, oh, I don't like that song, you know, or old people are like, oh, I don't like that, you know? And they were talking about how it's because roughly after the age 33, 34, your brain kind of stops really receiving new, variations of things like that. And you, and I'm curious, like, if that's almost because, you know, like what you're saying is that, you know, when you're in your 20s and even, you know, before your 20s, like you're so into things that are different and, you know, like just even being experimental in your kid, like jumping into a mud puddle, you know, like it's like, oh, what's the effect of this, you know? And like, so picking up a sitar, for example, in your 20s, you know, you're like, oh, I'm going to experiment with this and something might come of it, something might not. But then after a certain point, you kind of stop the experimental phase and it's more about trying to refine what you already know. And so it's not really conscious. It's more unconscious of what you're, if you're doing that. It's like, oh, I've already chosen these A through D things, you know, and that's it. And now I'm trying to make these better.
Huh. Yeah. I mean, it's really hard to argue against.
Yeah. I'm not saying that I'm right. I'm just saying it's just one of those things that I'm curious about.
Cause I mean, you know, I get into a music vein, you know, where like, recently I've been listening to a lot of Stereo Lab and that kind of led me down this avenue of listening to a lot of French, you know, music, you know, and just trying to like dive into like something that I know nothing about, you know, and listening to like a lot of different tracks or like, oh, what is this? What is this? You know, like what is, you know, what is this other genre of music that I know nothing about? And I have no idea what they're singing about, but I love, you know, I love hearing people speak in French. So, you know, hearing them sing in French, you know, is just like this other level. So, you know, that kind of led me down that avenue. And then, I watched the Beastie Boys documentary that's on Apple TV right now. So, you know, for those that haven't watched it, or if you like the Beastie Boys in any level, you know, I enjoyed it a lot. I mean, MCA's death was something that really, it was kind of one of those first musicians that really hit me in a way that, you know, just like sideways, where I just kind of was like, oh my God, like this is someone who I just loved their music from, you know, the first album on, you know, and just devoured their music as it came out. So seeing the documentary and kind of hearing their stories. So of course that led me down a path of like, well, first of all, you know, you always kind of want to like hear some of your favorites after you watch, you know, something like that. But then it also led me down a path of like, oh, you know, Mike Diamond has like his own playlist that he, you know, like curates essentially on Apple Music. So, you know, if you're wanting to know what they're listening to, you're like, oh shit. So then of course that led me down this whole path of like, you know, these, you know, songs that, I just was like, so I'm on this like two veins of like French music, you know, and like this, rhythm and blues, like, you know, like funk and funkadelic stuff, you know? And so I'm going in these like two directions and then, you know, I won't go down the Star Wars path, but you know, Nick and I, we've been watching Clone Wars. And if you don't know, they've released, the soundtrack for the story arcs. So episodes 1 through 4 has a soundtrack and so on. And so of course, been listening to the last 4 episodes of music. So this is like this Star Wars thematic, like emotional, you know, soundtrack, you know, and then it's just like, oh, I'm going to jump back to this like 1984, like, you know, funk song.
Yeah. I was going to talk about that tomorrow, actually, with part 3 of the Clone Wars, is that, you know, I love that music in part 3 because it's just, it drives that tension the entire episode. It's just kind of that same kind of eerie, you know, sound. I had to hear it again now, but I just remember thinking at the time, like, wow, this is really great.
The third episode or the fourth one?
The third, the one with the Order 66. Cause I'm pretty sure that one, it could be the fourth one, but,
the fourth one opens up with, I think probably
maybe it is the fourth one then.
It almost kind of references that, the music that, you hear when Anakin's in the chamber, you know, the Jedi Council chamber, like, you know, he's ruminating on Padme and what have you, and has that like really cool choral music. So that's really spooky. So, but yeah, we can talk about that, on Owen and Bruce tomorrow, but, yeah, the Beatles one, circling back to that, Nick, I couldn't agree with you more. I was really, you know, I Am the Walrus is just one of those songs that when I got into the Beatles, it probably was on my top 10 songs that I just loved by them and could always go back to.
Well, I mean, I remember there's definitely a few songs in my life that I remember just kind of sitting up and in my ears perking up, you know, and I remember like the first time I ever heard, Good Vibrations and just hearing that open, that weird pulse of that organ, just the way it sounded. And I remember, hearing Eye on the Walrus and just hearing lyrics like no one had ever written before. It was, yellow matted custard dripping from a dead dog's eye, going like, good mm-hmm. God, that's a lyric. Who it's the imagery of that and just the fact that someone thought of that, and I'm like, that's just,
it's some next level stuff, even just like the sound, the cascade of sound, samples that like end the song, I don't know how many times you've listened to that, but you get to the end of the song of I Am the Walrus, and I don't know if you do this, but I always like to go service of the villain. you hear these little sound clips and you know them so well, service of the villain.
Oh yeah, I mean, anytime that whole 66, 67 period where they're doing all those backward lyrics, the end of the day in the life, there's like there's all these weird, and you're just kind of, I'd always do that, or like, cranberry sauce, or some people say, I buried Paul,
at the end of I Am the Walrus, you can hear Yoko in the background saying, oompa, oompa, stick it in your oompa. Like there's like this whole chorus going on in the background, they just layered shit.
Okay, so. I didn't realize she was on the recording. I knew he'd met her at that point, but I didn't. Okay, interesting.
That's what I always heard.
Well, I knew he met her in 67 at her art exhibit, but I mm-hmm. didn't know he had let her in the studio at that point.
But, unless it was something that he recorded and then took into the studio, but that's what mm-hmm. I always heard. So, whether or not, John just, like did some kind of studio wizardry. I wanted to give a shout out to Sherry in the chat, my family likes to sit around a fire with a speaker. Then everybody takes a turn playing a song. It's kind of nice. You get to listen to different styles of music that you might not have. And to Sherry's point, we kind of do that as a family when we're on car rides. So when we're on car rides, as opposed to one of us just picking our music, we'll kind of go around the car. And even though our kids are younger, there's certain songs we kind of always know, like, okay, it's my son's turn to pick a song. He's going to pick Back in Black by AC/DC, or he likes any of the songs that are in the Avengers movies. He has an actual Avengers playlist of music.
That's actually something that I am glad with. The Avengers movies and, Guardians of the Galaxy, things like that, with bringing in a lot of this older music. Because my nephews, when they'd be in the car with me driving somewhere, I listened to everything. But, they could hear something like Fox on the Run before Guardians of the Galaxy and go, Nick, is this your kind of music, this old stuff? But then it's in that movie and they're like, oh, this is neat. And it's just because of that movie. Mm-hmm. And so it gets them into things because, like, I remember my nephew watched The Martian, and because of The Martian, he liked Starman. I never remember, was terrible with titles, but Starman. Yeah. By David Bowie.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so he's like, what is this song? He's like, that's David Bowie. His mom, my sister, I love her to death, but she's a greatest hits person, which drives me nuts. So, she'll hear that song off of that movie and download that one song. And I'm like, Brooke, sorry, that's my sister's name here, buddy. I'm like, just get the whole Ziggy Stardust record. It's good all the way from start to finish. Just buy the record. Well, I just want the one song. Buy the whole freaking record. It's a concept record. It's meant to be heard as a whole.
You got to hear Moon Age Daydream. You got to hear Rock and Roll Suicide. You got to hear it all. Exactly. By the way, the Moon Age Daydream, although I like the album version, I think it's the Arnold
Korn.
Yeah, that version, the outtake version is like so good. It's like, it's one of those rare moments where you're like, this alternate version, to me, overtakes the album version. Same with, like, again, in this Beatles, voting thing, the Helter Skelter version. Take Two.
Oh, right.
Still absolutely my favorite.
Oh, yeah. The anthology, I've Got a Feeling, to me, is way better than the one song Let It Be record.
And that's a mashup of several different takes too.
Yeah.
Like, because of some of the things that they say, like, cause I had, before Anthology 3 came out, I had a bootleg copy. You know, I think we've talked about it. I had a bootleg copy of the Black Album. Mm-hmm. So there was a version of I've Got a Feeling, and they say certain things in that. And then they say it in a different version, and they mashed those two together. And it was kind of one of those like, oh, you took this part and you took this part and you put them together. They've done that with some of Dylan's bootlegs too, where they'll take a little piece of this one take and then they'll splice it with a little bit of that take so that you get like actually not the original take, but kind of like the best of both.
Right. I mean, so, that doesn't bother me too much. I mean, if it works, it works.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. No, no. I mean, like I'm all for like making a better version. It's just like, you know, I think the rockin' version of Visions of Johanna, you know, I love it's one of those rare ones where I love the Blonde on Blonde, Dylan, Visions of Johanna. It's peaceful. It's, you know, it's got this dark lullaby kind of thing going on, but the rockin' version on the bootleg is so good.
Bootleg, you mean bootleg 66 or
bootleg 7? I think it's the Scorsese film.
Oh, that one.
Okay. He did, like, yeah, that no version. Home, yeah. The or, No Direction Home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. To me, I know a lot of people would say a lot of the songs on Blonde, but yeah, Vision of Johanna on Blonde and Blonde is probably the one I at least listen to the most, because I mean, just the lyrics and the imagery and just like the fact that someone wrote that good of lyrics in one song and could remember all that. You're like, gee, how do you do that? You
know? Yeah. Jewels and Binoculars. Mm-hmm. Hang from the Head of the Mule. Yeah. It's got a lot in there. Love that song. But you know, I mean, you're right. You know, I know Kayla was really excited about me mentioning Avengers music, and,
well, it's great. I mean, cause even like, is it Endgame or no, it's the first one.
Infinity War.
Infinity War. You know, like the very first thing you see is Guardians of the Galaxy, and you hear Rubber Band Man by the Spinners. You know, and it's things like that. It's like, who would think of this late '70s? I think it's late '70s. You know, song that's, you know, it was a minor hit. You know, I think it was a part of a soundtrack originally, and but now that brought that song back into reference. I mean, to people like it now again, and a lot of those songs, I mean, a lot of those, especially from Guardians of the Galaxy 1, a lot of those are just easy listening, or, you know, almost corporate rock of the 70s, and you know, you wouldn't think those would be, but now they're relevant again. So
yeah, I was actually looking for my son's playlist, because he it's actually called Avengers Assemble, and it basically has songs from, it has songs from basically all of the different movies, including, you know, the Ramones song from the Spider-Man movies, you know? So,
hey, little girl, wanna be your boyfriend.
Yeah. Well, there's the other one too, that from that, cause that's the second,
there's Far From Home. Yeah.
Yeah. The other one, Homecoming, has the, Blitzkrieg.
Oh, Blitzkrieg Bop. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is great to kind of hear like all of, you know, just kind of an amalgamation of that stuff. But true to the John Williams influence that is on my family, my son also has the Avengers theme, the thematic score by what is it, Alan Silverstreet? Silver.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I'd be curious what your son would think if you played him the Rite of Spring. You're talking about like other kinds of music, classical, because the Rite of Spring is basically what Lucas had said to John Williams. You know, it's like, I want Star Wars to sound like the Rite of Spring. And if you listen to that classical piece, which is, you know, it's a whole album, it's a long piece of music. Listen to that and you can hear just tons and tons of Star Wars themes and that are in there.
Oh yeah.
That John Williams kind of like, oh, I'm going to take this little bit and change it to this. And, and it's just, you can't not listen to that. And then
it's weird to think about like Star Wars music and how the throne room, you know, the throne room, which you think of throne room being like something with the Emperor or Darth Vader, or, you know, Kylo Ren or Snoke, or, but really, you know, you're talking about A New Hope, the throne room, the music that they play at the very end of the movie is called Throne Room. And it's so good. Like, that song is like, so, I mean, it's basically like a wedding, you know, piece. Like, it has this like, just power to it that I just, yeah, every time I hear it, I'm always like, you know.
I read a quote today because I wouldn't bring this up during Owen and Bruce, but Matt, I forget his name, the guy who voiced Anakin in Clone Wars. Isn't it Matt?
You got me.
Anyway, I couldn't. The voice of Anakin in Clone Wars, anyway.
All Matt talking, the same to me.
They were asking him about the sequels, and he wasn't really knocking them, but he basically was saying that, you know, the thing that irks him about the ending of The Rise of Skywalker is not the things that are irking most people. It's that he goes, if you look at the end of Return of, I'm bastardizing his quote, but it's like, but if you look at the end of Return of the Jedi, it's the perfect ending in a way, in that it wasn't killing. It was a moment of a hero throwing away his defenses and saying, I trust in you, you know?
Right.
And love, in a way, defeated evil.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, and if you look at the way this one ended, he goes, it's there, but you also have, I'm going to melt off your face. You know? Sure. And so it's like, he goes, so it's not quite the same. I mean,
there's a few things that I think if they had set it up, and we've talked about this probably ad nauseum for, mm-hmm. for those that do or do not know or listen to our Owen and Bruce. If they had set up this whole idea of the Emperor being a clone in that movie, it doesn't take away from the fact that the Emperor dies in Return of the Jedi. It's a different person altogether. You know, even though they want you to think that it's the same, because basically it's taking that from the Dark Empire comic series, you know, the whole clone thing, which I'm completely fine with. Like, I think that that's like an avenue to go, but they should have at least set that up a little bit better, you know, as far as like, this is a clone, this isn't the same. Oh, by the way, Rey is the daughter of one of his previous clones. Set up all of that so that we know, and that we don't have to actually read a fucking novel to find this out. Like, I love that stuff being in the novel, but you have basically kind of made it so that it's there if you want it, but if you don't want it, you don't have to see it that way. It's too convoluted, and we don't need to go down how we can shit on that movie anymore. So
yeah, I know.
Oh, I don't think Jack's gonna join us tonight.
No, I don't think so. Like I said, they're probably going to run long.
Yeah. What Beatles song do you want to win this championship? Like, what do you see it coming down to?
Well, the thing is that, like, you can't, because you don't know, all you Jane Jack listeners out there, you don't know what you're going to vote, you know? I know if Jay was here, Jay would vote for A Day in the Life.
Yep.
I'm always going to pick Here Comes the Sun because
I was going to say like that. Those are two that kind of pop to the foreground of songs that like, and I was surprised that Here Comes the Sun was actually having a hard time beating out. Like, what was it?
Let It Be.
Yeah. And I'm like, and I liked, was it? Oh, hey, there is Jack.
Jack joins.
What, we just.
Shocker.
Oh, yeah. His screen's frozen. Ah, fuck him.
No, he's not. He's just playing.
Thanks for joining us, Jack.
Hey, no problem. I'm glad I could be here. I thought you guys were done, but Colleen said no, they're still going.
Well, we're doing a bonus episode right now.
A bonus episode. Okay.
Basically, when Chris had to go, we said, okay, we'll just cut it there. And hey, wow, mine's double.
I just want trouble. I wanted to make sure that Jack got here safely.
Corona quarantine.
Next pod. Yeah, welcome to his next podcast.
Well, Jay, you can join us for the next few minutes.
I don't have a photographic memory. I could get lost.
We're debating on what song we think is going to win the Beatle.
Well, let's see what Jay says, you know, since Nick has already basically called it.
I called what you were going to pick, and I said,
I'll take a drink if you're right.
Did you guys get my idea?
No, wait, what? What?
Hi. So, crashing for a second. So
Jay, your voice has changed.
So, I had the ideas when we got down to the Sweet 16 or whatever it's called. Maybe the take 16 songs that were left off and do like those. I don't know how we would rank them. Like then like a new, bring a new 16 in and go back to 32, and then I don't know, because there are a lot of songs that were left off. But I mean,
doesn't
matter, because there was so many great songs that I didn't even notice like any of the songs that were left off.
It's time.
Right, yeah, it was a good idea. I talked about it on the broadcast yesterday, and okay, bye.
Bye, call.
Wait, what just fucking happened?
That was Survivor.
We went to a robot chicken.
That was Survivor recording. I apologize. Boss is not there. He's out.
I think it's funny that Help is getting so many votes when it didn't get any votes when I picked it.
What it's going up against, right? I think. Okay, yeah. So you want my pick? Nick, I'm guessing, assumed that I would pick A Day in the Life. Is that correct? I'm assuming it's what you probably pick. It depends. I think it'll be between A Day in the Life or Something, or Here Comes the Sun, one of those
two. Something. I don't know if that song's going to win. Yeah. I don't think so.
I'm taking another drink because Nick picked Here Comes the Sun.
I was like, Jay will pick A Day in the Life, and I'm going to pick Here Comes the Sun.
I've known Nick for 15 years or whatever. Like, I feel like there's a certain point where, I probably know someone.
True.
Nick was sharing all the photos of us, like, in our teens at Comic-Con or whatever.
It was just crazy because to me, I mean, even though it was 11 years ago, that those pictures, it doesn't seem it was that long ago, but it was that long ago.
Our teens, so you had pictures of me and Matt in the 70s?
No.
I mean, that's 1967, actually. So
yeah, we were stuck in the dubs and
It was so cool, man.
Clapton is God. I'm the guy that spray painted that on the wall.
Anytime there's a 70s, because my wife, we worked in rinks, and they used to have these speed. They'd take the public session skaters had to get off the ice, So the hockey players would skate really fast, and they always call it speed and hockey. She goes, "Oh, that's one of our." So anytime there's a 70s song, I go, "Oh, that's one of our speed and hockey skates." She gets mad, but I think it's funny.
Like most of your jokes,
I do it because that's what keeps me young.
But so Jay, Matt, and I were talking earlier during this bonus episode about how I usually don't care which song wins, but the only one that really kind of irked me was "I'm the Walrus" losing to "Can't Buy Me Love." That one,
"Can't Buy Me Love,"
it was nails on a chalkboard. Like, I'm going to punch somebody.
Why? That it was a much better movie, "Can't Buy Me Love," than "The Walrus."
Because it was all these poppy songs. All the poppy, like, early songs are doing really well.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show, like, there's like even the Office one, where it's just like a lot. It's like, wait, this episode is like one of the best of all time. How is this losing to the Christmas episode? Which I love the Christmas episode. Don't get me wrong, but the injury is not going to be there. Like,
that injury is by far one of the funniest episodes of The Office of all time.
So I think there is, like, if you're like a passionate fan, or like, I like the Beatles.
And
I think
what ended up winning on The Office, I forgot.
Which is
a good one.
The night.
Yeah.
Everything all right.
I'm gonna sing that at least once a week if we're in, like.
You sing that a lot.
I do. It's just like we're just driving. Like today, we're driving around in the middle of nowhere. I was like, that one night.
Well, when I posted the video of the like greatest hits from that actual episode, I forgot how many jokes are actually in that episode. Like,
so many.
The TV.
Do you have any idea how many? The toll of how many the vasectomies?
We can have it, a man. Snip, snap, snip, snap. Well, snap.
If you look at bloopers from that season, I guess they kept laughing every time he grabbed the plasma TV. They couldn't keep a straight face. I just finished my rewatch the other day, so I just the last episode. The Office. Probably one of the better endings of a TV show.
Yeah, it was really strong. I love the fact that Dwight, and the whole wedding and his best man and that whole like Jim being there and then the surprise of Michael. Right. It was just like so sweet. And mm-hmm. I even love the episode right before that, like leading up to that, like seeing like I felt like it those last three episodes were really strong.
Yeah.
So Just as far as the show goes, like it had a nice landing. It ended strong,
which is hard for a lot of TV shows to have a good strong ending, because it, like even Seinfeld, people say the ending was weak. You know, people didn't like the finale. But I forgot to mention Modern Family, which I watched to the end. My God, my wife and I watched it separate times. I go, did they just give up?
Yeah, I mean,
did they say fuck it? Remember, we're just going to put some generic thing out there, and it's going to be. I think, yeah, you told me.
I said I didn't spoil it for you, but I just said, like, well, I was like, you know, it was just a typical ending of like, oh, let's all hug it out, and then you're like, oh, really? I was like, yeah,
it was like okay, it took nothing to write. I mean, at one point, yeah. I mean, Modern Family, of course, the last few years, it should have ended years ago.
Yeah,
but at one point, it was one of the best shows on TV. It was funny. It was hilarious. It was fresh.
That's how I feel.
They just gave up.
Yeah, it always irks me a little bit when people try to say, like, you know, like when they try to compare like The Office to Friends or Seinfeld to Friends. I'm like, look, I was like, Seinfeld and The Office are up here. I was like, Friends is a great show, but really, when you think about it, it doesn't. To me, it's not as high as those two. I was like, and to me, Friends, even though I like it, should have ended in London in the end of fourth season. I was like, after that, there's definitely some episodes that are great. I was like, but the story is done. As soon as Ross goes to London to marry Emily or whatever her name was, and then Rachel shows up, it should have just been like, I love you, and then him leaving her and then getting married, and that should have been the show.
Mm-hmm. You always talk about how, Matt, you always talk about how Andy's character really flip-flopped. Ross's character in Friends, he became stupid, right?
Yeah.
Definitely. So he became the butt of the – I mean, he was always kind of the butt of the jokes, but he became Woody from Cheers. It was like, when did this happen? I don't know.
Sorry, go ahead, Matt.
I got nothing to say.
Clearly you have nothing to say.
Because I'm right?
No. I'm just –
Well, I do want to say something about The Office. Sorry.
Just now reading the chat. This is private chat, people. Go ahead, Jay.
Is that I do think the American Office could follow how well I think the British Office ended, where the British Office had the two Christmas specials, which was like set a year after the documentary ended, and it kind of followed up with all these people, and it kind of had the conclusion for the Tim Canterbury and what was the Pam's name? I'm blanking out her name.
Oh,
this one.
Pam.
It's Tim Canterbury and whatever. I can't remember her name.
Whoa. Mr. Photographic Memory.
Let me think about it.
Let me think about it.
Carl, just grab a mic and join us.
Yeah, we don't really want Colleen to join us. She's crying tonight.
Oh,
whoa.
Tonight. Sexist. I can't believe you just said that about your wife on air.
Don. That's right, Don. Don.
So you looked it up.
Yeah, it's Matt being
Matt. Google is my photographic memory.
I feel like this is another inside joke between you two.
It's from the Survivor show.
So. Thanks for bringing your Survivor.
The only reason it's a joke because Jay was kind of a dick, kind of an arrogant ass about it.
Oh my God.
I would not. No. That. No.
Jay. Not Jay. Never.
It's called photographic memory. Look it up.
But he was saying it like dismissively. It was like, it's called a photographic memory. Look it up.
Oh, I was just joking. Everybody else can joke around here.
It's the tone in which you joke.
Look, the first
photographic memory. Look it up.
It's not like someone who like just takes a joke and just drives it into the ground again and again.
Says it every episode.
Again and again. It never forgets it.
Never. You guys missed
it. That's a photographic memory.
You guys missed it. Matt came in a little buzzed early in the episode this time and then proceeded to drink multiple cups of coffee. And so then he became a hyper drunk. So now he's like,
I
like how I left the last show before you could flip me off again.
Yeah, you did. Perfect timing. By the way, I had this fan letter here for you, Jack. Somebody wrote in and said, shut the fuck up.
He's already done that joke today.
Well, it works twice.
It's really good. I thought it was really funny.
Jay didn't see it, so it was for Jay.
Nick, can I just say, your hair looks really good right now. You got little curly things. I don't know if you took.
That's what we're hoping Alex's hair will grow into. Look like Nick.
Brought it back.
You never know. That's what I'm saying. That's what happens when you're under quarantine and you haven't had a haircut in like 2-3 months. You start to get that Revolver album cover look.
What's going on in Colorado? Is Colorado opening up?
Well, it's just like Tennessee and Georgia and a few other states, and that like on May 3rd, Monday, whenever it was, like we have limited open. So it's like you can go into some places, but it's all very – like if you're in a restaurant, like like 2 tables have to be open between the next one, you know, so it's very limited. Yeah. For now. I don't know. I haven't left the house since like March 9th, so I don't know.
Oh, so the restaurants are opening.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now that I know Jack's here and he's safe, I don't feel like you gentlemen got him. I'm gonna say goodbye. I'm gonna see you both tomorrow.
So. Yes, Jay will see you tomorrow. Bye, Kyle.
See ya. Bye.
Bye.
Kayla is asking where her envelope is. once my wife found out that a female listener had sent me something.
Oh, that's sweet, Jack.
Thanks, Jack. My wife threw out your envelope, so I don't know what happened to your envelope. So, yeah, I see it, Jack. I got you. Okay. Yeah.
I don't know if do you have a photographic memory? Just in case you don't.
I'm gonna be like a dog when they're in trouble.
Anyway. That's good podcasting because people that aren't watching are going, what the hell's going on for them?
Well, if they don't know what a dog looks like when they're in trouble, then
Jack is expressing his undying love for Matt.
Thank you. It was really
touching.
By the way, they you know, we talked about The Office and how they could just do like a versus with like all of the best openers. One of my favorite openers is when Michael's gone and Jim is basically leading a meeting and Dwight is taking notes with a recorder, and he's like, Dwight, put down the knife. Why are you wearing pants? And like it just like keeps going on and on. And so I think about that.
One of my favorite openers is the cube and the TV.
Oh, oh yeah, yeah, that one's because a good one too.
Where Michael's talking.
He's talking, yeah, and everyone's just watching because I can't tell you how many times I've done that, you know, and so I think that's why people like it, because everyone at some point has done that where it's just a little thing just floating in the TV. And then it's like one day it's going to hit the corner. And then you go back to Pam going, did Jim say he saw it? Yeah, he tells me he saw it, but I don't think he really saw it. You know, and then all of a sudden it happens. Everyone's like, yes.
Well, the best part is because Michael's actually giving a good constructive, he's actually giving information. Mm-hmm. He's not being the stupid. And he, you know, that's what makes it work too, because they're all like, oh
no, that is a good opener. I like that one too. So actually I watched a video like, and I think it was through NBC, of like 10 greatest openers.
I sent it to you.
Yeah, I watched that and I was just like, this doesn't have the 10 best. Like it doesn't
it's from different seasons.
Yeah, but it doesn't have Bears Beats Battlestar Galactica. I mean that's, I would say that would, if you had a versus, Bears Beats Battlestar Galactica would probably win as far as one of the best openers, because he comes in looking like Dwight and just the way that it ends. It's so iconic. So
well, they had the last one where Jim is the Asian guy from pretending to be Jim.
No, I love that one. That was
Pam comes up, gives him a kiss, and they goes, our kids, and he even looks at the camera like,
yeah, that's a good one too. That would be in my, yeah, that would definitely be in the top Sweet 16 and in my book.
Again, I just finished it. I'm like going, I'm almost tempted to do another rewatch, but I can't.
I would just, and I've recommended it, you know, listen to The Office.
Yeah, I'm gonna start. I joined their Facebook page, so I'm gonna start listening to it.
It is a bright spot in my Wednesday, because they release new episodes on Wednesdays, and a lot of times, as I've talked about this in the previous podcast, my work week is so mixed up. It's like I go into work at different times, and it's kind of. So at my work, I have these low bays. They're like big halogen lights, and basically it takes, you know, 10 minutes to turn them on. And once they're on, you need to leave them on. And because I'm only there for a couple hours, I just turn on these, like, these fluorescents that are kind of like, you know, off in the distance. So it's not really bright. It's kind of dark and it feels lonely, you know? And so I'm always going in by myself, making up an order real quick.
Are you lonely tonight?
I mean, it is what it is, you know, but when I go in though, like having the office ladies, it's just like a bright spot of sunshine in my day. Like hearing those two actresses talk about their experiences on The Office, and you know, what is that? Huh? Why are you flipping?
I saw a bird flying. Oh, and yeah? I did want to change my, cause remember I said I'd blame Pam for the fight. Because I said, you know, Jim supported her and her art thing. She didn't support him on his job. But, you know, looking at Jim wasn't completely honest with her in the beginning. So, right. And he kind of took advantage of Pam being, mm-hmm. Pam being easygoing Pam and stuff like that. So right. I'm going to say Jim shared, he probably deserved probably at least 60% of the blame. So I take back what I said about Pam. Jim was more to blame, I think, than.
I mean, I'm with you. Like the fight that they go through, it's not easy.
No, it's even though I know it's hard to watch.
It's hard to watch. Like, I mean, I knew it was coming and I was just like, oh, I don't want to go through this fight again. But I will say that it is one of those moments in the show that like, I just feel that it brings a little bit of reality to their relationship, because not all relationships are perfect, and we right. see them. We see the perfectness of that, you know, for people to go through their entire life thinking, oh, I'm not like Jim and Pam because my life's not perfect. You know, fuck that. Like relationships are gritty at some point. Like you go through mm-hmm. fights, and if you can't get through the fight, if you can't reconcile your differences, whether you're married or just, you know, boyfriend and girlfriend, it's not going to last. And it's
yeah.
Not,
I know my wife and I've been perfect. 34 years. We've had two fights, I think.
Two fights. Wow. That's impressive. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Today.
Well, today. It's weird. Cause I've been podcasting with you for a while and I feel like it's not just two.
But no, it is really uncomfortable. And there's a scene where Jim has to go back to Phil. It was a Valentine's Day, I think. Mm-hmm. Right. And he just like, there's just, you can feel that their acting is so good.
Yeah.
You can feel it seems so real. I think that's what it is. It's not like a typical sitcom where it's like, oh, you know, Rachel and Ross are fighting as a copy girl. Okay. It was funny, but it wasn't like, okay, I really believe that they're boyfriend, girlfriend. Whereas in Friends, you believe it.
It's also the quietness of the fight. It's the fact right. that some fights aren't spoken out loud. It's not the fact that you're yelling at someone or, you know, I mean, I think that a lot of people go into, you know, relationships thinking, you know, and I'm a guy. So if I'm fighting, you know, like I want it to be fixed. I want it to be fixed and I want it to be over and that's it.
As soon as right. possible. Wow.
But that's not how it works.
No.
And if you're a guy out there and you think that that's how it works, I'm here to tell you,
get out now.
You got to learn this, because it's not like that. And it takes time to heal all wounds. And I just feel like it's the most honest, and that's why it hurts. But I will also say that their reconciliation makes it all the sweeter when it does happen. And I'm glad that they didn't wait until the very last episode for them.
No.
That you actually do get them back together and you get to live with them being happy together again. You know, it's definitely.
Because you wonder, because the boom mic guy seems to have a crush on Pam.
Right.
And, you know, his marriage is broken up. He saves him from the guy that drew the butts on her,
yes, that's right.
Her mural. And, so yeah, you're just like, wow, is Pam going to cheat on Jim? What's going on? I mean, right. it's just crazy. And, you know, and Jim finally has a job. In fairness to Jim finally has a job that he's passionate about, where mm-hmm. his passion was always just, you know, finding something to do in the office to, you know, when Saber first took over, he was gung ho, mm-hmm. right? Because he could make. But then they had that thing where they had a limit,
Yeah.
So I'm supposed to just sit around here for the next 6 months and do nothing. Right. And that's when him and Dwight start building a relationship, because they figure out how to cheat the system.
Yeah. And they come up with a fake person.
Right. So that people say, oh, they became friends at the last minute. No, you can see it happening over time that they.
Oh, yeah. You know, Or even when Jim does go away and Dwight's like, oh, I miss my friend, you know, you can kind of see that, you know, building. One thing that the Office Ladies podcast just had mentioned in the most recent episode, and I'll share it with you now, because I thought it was like such a wow moment, is that the office interviews with the people, you know, when they're kind of just having their little interview at the,
in the conference room.
Yeah. In the conference room. So one listener pointed this out, and they actually talked about it and researched this, but Jim's is always in an outside facing window.
Right.
He's not inside facing. And so some listener had pointed this out. Why did this happen? And I think Jenna Fisher had asked, somebody on the, I don't know who, you can check it out, to find out more details. But the cool thing about it is that it was an artistic choice to show that Jim was always looking outside, like he wasn't settling for what was in the office, that he was always thinking outside of the office, and that whenever they had a character that was, their mind was thinking outside of, and even it switches at some point where you see Michael interviewing in front of the outside windows, because they are looking outside as to what is beyond the office, and the characters that are actually comfortable with being in the office, or they want to stay within the office, they're always on an inside facing window. Oh, okay. And I was like, oh, wow, that's like really that's clever.
Yeah. I figured it's just because they couldn't get Stanley to work that day.
Yeah. Cause you always see Stanley in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can you imagine him that part? Just Stanley to sit here for 10 hours while we film this.
I'm getting paid.
I guess it's true. But
I mean, think of the residuals that actor gets for sitting, you know, like that. So, I mean,
no, I love The Office. It's such a great show.
I like Stanley's character though, because I mean that would be me in a lot of situations.
Did
like,
I stutter?
That clock is slow. It's time to go home.
That's an uncomfortable episode.
where
Stanley yells at Michael.
Mm-hmm.
And then Michael has the fake firing.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
And you're like going, because, you know, Michael doesn't know how to handle things. But in the end, Michael is not he's crazy, and he doesn't, but he's good at selling paper.
And also, I think you see his character grow, and the fact that there's that Halloween episode where you always kind of like look down on Michael, but you see that, I think the Halloween episode is like the first one where you actually see him giving out candy to kids, and you're like, oh, he has a heart and he cares.
Right.
And you know, just that love of wanting a family and kind of his growth.
Cause he had a terrible fact, you know, I think he said, or was the episode where they have bring your daughter to work day.
Mm-hmm.
And he has I was a star of a TV show.
Yeah.
I find out he goes, I just want so I can have some friends.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
really, and the scary puppet goes, looks at the camera and turns around. And it's like, you know, we're laughing, but that's true for kids. I mean, there's kids out there that, you know, unfortunately get bullied, and you can see why. I had an argument with someone on Reddit one time about it, and they just kept saying, I go, you have to understand what Michael went through. He says the wrong thing, but there's a reason for it.
Mm-hmm. Even the birthday episode, Michael's birthday episode, where, you know, it's just like you hear about all of the bad birthdays he has.
Yeah.
You know, like from his youth. You know?
And Kevin might have skin cancer, right?
Right.
Is that the one?
Yep. And that's they talk about that one and how he is a skater. And I think I even talked to him about that. So,
and he's definitely a skater.
He used to play pickup games for hockey.
Yeah. So, he's got skill.
But yeah, I mean, that's the only reason why I got into podcasting, is because I needed to have more friends.
Yeah.
I met Jack.
Has it worked out?
Not really. So I keep getting this fan mail for you. So anyway, we've been talking for another hour, basically. bonus episode.
It's time for my nap.
Well, we were just about done, and then Jack showed up, and we're like, oh, okay. another
bonus episode. I was going to go. I figured you guys were done, and then Colleen said, no, they're still there. Not that Colleen talks that way, but I said, no, they're still there. So I came running over, and I said, oh, okay.
We talked a lot about music and Beatles and what have you, so.
And, no yawning, Nick. I'm about ready to fall asleep.
All the things that we figured, oh, Jack didn't want to talk about this. We'll knock this out now.
You know? I hate the Beatles. That's true. So.
Well, I mean, we talked about Star Wars. We talked about, you know, lawn care.
I have a lawn.
We talked about hair maintenance.
We did.
Yeah, that would be, that's a rough one for me.
Oh, shit. Anyway. I want to thank everyone in the chat who joined us for this post. Jack's frozen again. Great. Got to unfreeze him out of carbonite. he blinked. No, I want to thank, you know, Kayla, Sherry, I think Will, Jesse, Randy.
Jack,
somebody named Colleen. Everybody in the chat that joined us.
I want to thank Jay and Matt in the private chat.
Okay. On that note, I think I've already thanked the patrons, so I don't really need to thank them again, right? I mean, this is just... Right?
It's your show. You do what you want.
All right. Well, on that note, I mean, I already gave the shout out on there. This is the bonus. This will be a patrons bonus.
Time out. Will, have you not ever seen The Office? He said I might watch The Office after I finish Community.
Oh, yeah. Community is a good show.
I mean, that's one of those shows that really could have been unbelievably good. You know, yeah. it never got the ratings in its mm-hmm. first two or three seasons that are the best ones.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, just all the Chevy Chase drama and then, you know, what's his name? Dan, the writer.
Dan Harmon.
Dan Harmon, you know, getting not fired but quitting or whatever, getting replaced. You know, that derailed the fourth season, and then
the last season was picked up by like Yahoo. And it even though it brought in different characters and it kind of pieced it together, it just really lost the momentum of those first three seasons.
It's
the first three seasons of MASH, the first three seasons of The Office. I mean, although The Office, I think still stays strong, but it's just like when you think about comedy shows, it's just like, I mean, the writing in the first couple seasons of The Community is so witty. I mean, like I went back and rewatched it. And that first season, I was just like, ba-bam, 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 ba-bam. It was just like jokes, rat-a-tat-tat. Like it's very, very smart. So.
It's a shame that Chevy Chase is such an a-hole because he's a comedic genius. He's
hilarious. And that one scene with him getting ice cream, that is classic Chevy Chase right there. Yeah. Like I love that. Like the machine's going and he's just trying to keep it in his hands. It's
because they
like,
say who's the best person on a Weekend Update. I always go Chevy Chase.
Yeah.
I go, there's been some great ones. I go, but he was,
I mean, but he was only on for one season. So
because that first season of Saturday Night Live is fantastic, but he carries Weekend Update.
Yeah, I was reading about Norm Macdonald or just SNL characters that were fired, and I didn't realize that Norm Macdonald got fired because he refused to stop making O.J. Simpson jokes.
Oh, really? Is that what it was?
Yeah, because like it was like well into like 97 or 98, he was still making O.J. Simpson jokes about him murdering his wife. And you're like, this joke has been going on for 4 years.
I have no issues with those jokes.
I love the Norm Macdonald Weekend Update. I was upset when they replaced him. So I was a huge fan of his shtick.
I mean, I loved Dan Aykroyd and Jane Curtin. They were great together too. But
most
of the Weekend Update is the best. It's always been probably the best part of the show.
But I mean, like even when Tina Fey and Jimmy Fallon came into the 2000s, like I mean, they really hit a stride, and then you know they didn't miss a beat when they replaced Jimmy Fallon with am I blanking on her name now?
I know.
For fuck's sake, I just Parks and Rec, Leslie Nope.
Amy Poehler.
God, why couldn't I think of her name? But yeah, I just watched the Parks and Rec Zoom episode the other day. So,
and the two guys doing it now at first were terrible.
Yeah, but they've really
they really got their act together.
And I love how they have this ongoing thing about like them writing each other's jokes. Like that has just like been hilarious. So, but
yeah, I mean, I think you're right though, because even Dennis
Leary,
no,
Dennis Miller. Sorry,
Dennis Miller. Even Dennis Miller was great, sure. You know, at it too. I mean, like all of them were good.
Problem with Dennis Miller is you have to really pay attention because his comedy is smart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so you're like gonna go. Okay, got it.
Yeah,
okay, got it.
And I'm sure my sister owns it on VHS, but I remember the 15 year anniversary of SNL. Uh-huh. They had like a, you know, and then like years later, I remember just watching all these different SNL clips. And, you know, it was always great. Even the Billy Crystal 1 year, you know, they got mm-hmm. all this professional comedy. Like everybody, up to a point, it was just great. You know, I mean, I felt that SNL really kind of dropped off, you know, somewhere around 2004 or 2005, you know, and then I kind of quit watching it after that. But see,
that's also when like 2004 or 2005 is when, you know, Bill Hader came on,
yeah,
Andy Sandberg, and I mean that like they pumped new life into it. It's just funny how like every, you know, I mean there is a lull, but I think there's always these new comedians that come in and they have that fire in them where they had a
stretch where they couldn't figure out how to end the sketches.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it was obvious. It was like, okay, this is funny, but now we're just dragging this on because we can't figure out how to end it.
Yeah.
They kind just like this, sound like this episode of our Ramblecast.
Well, it's amazing. I mean, well, you're right though, about like the Bill Hader and Andy Samberg era. I mean, I would watch them, but I would never find the episodes funny as a whole. Or like, to me, Andy Samberg's best stuff was always the video shorts, you know, yeah, like, you sure. know, you have Dick in the Box. Like you have like Natalie Portman's episode where she's like laughing, you know, and,
or when he's on cocaine.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah. That was a good one.
That's hilarious.
So. And so like, to me, those aren't really sketches, you know, they're actually pre-written things, you know, and also you also forget that, you know, Dave Chappelle had Chappelle's Show, you know, 2003, 2004. So that kind of, to me, knocked SNL away for a couple years there.
I don't know. I think just always think that of those being like different things.
They are, but they're still sketch comedy though.
Sure. Sure. But you know, that's also written and not live. So sure.
Well, I remember when Fridays came along and really screwed up.
Okay.
Or SCTV. I mean, it was like,
yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, okay.
I mean, you guys were alive back then, so yeah.
We really need to end this episode. I was trying to call it quits at an hour, and we
went. Yeah, I'm ready to go to sleep, so can we end this thing?
We are ending
fine.
It.
Fine.
Great show, kids. It was one in...
a million.
Yeah, or something like that. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, everyone.
See ya next week or tomorrow.